Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan and Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, 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 it's Megan and Biro here, coming to you from Brighton, Massachusetts. If anyone follows me on Instagram or Twitters or Facebook, you know that I'm all about Work Bar right now. And I'm in one of my offices. I get to go between like a global community of offices. Speaking of global mindset, right? I'm all about, you know, as an entrepreneur, I like to mix it up. I'm sure many of you do too. I mean, we're all working in different cultures, so to speak, right? So today we're going to be talking about a global mindset and why we need this in training to be today's, not yesterday's HR pro. So thanks for stopping by. As everybody knows here, if you're listening in on any regular basis, a few weeks from now, we're going to go to a new production. So we're saying bye-bye to Blog Talk Radio. It's been a fun ride, but we're upping our game over here in the Work Trends community, and we're here to serve you, you great people out there. So anyways, this is really an interesting topic today. We're talking about training, but with a twist. We're talking about why training pros need to have this sort of global mindset approach to training. As more people become remote and our workforce becomes more spread out on a global basis, it's extremely important to all employees to be offered the chance to learn, and more importantly, to learn in a way that's most impactful for them, right? So today we have a leader in the field of training. Her name is Donna Steffi. She's hanging out in Florida today, so I'm a little bit jealous. And she's the president of Vital Signs Consulting. They're she's an international trainer, author, facilitator of the ATD Master Trainer Program. She's been doing a lot of stuff. Donna, welcome aboard. Tell us just a little bit more about you in one sentence or less. No pressure.
Thanks, Megan. I'm happy to be with you today. I think one of the most interesting things about me and my career is that I've trained in 25 countries in 25 years.
Wow.
And it's one of the goals I have to go to a new country every single year. So it's pretty exciting.
That's totally exciting. And by the way, that Chicago accent, right?
Yes, it is.
It's unmistakable. And now tell us a little bit more about where you live and what you're up to. Because now you're not in Chicago. You're very smart.
Yes, I'm a snowbird. I'm in Florida, in the Orlando area, and it is nice to be away from Chicago during the winter.
Okay. Now, is this only winter? So you're doing winter, and then you're kind of traveling on back there when?
May, June. You know, we're not going to rush it.
Oh, look at you.
It stays cold in Chicago for a long time.
Jealous.
I know.
Hashtag jealous work trends guest. Okay, everybody. I'm here in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm a New England girl through and through, but I am traveling as much as possible just to kind of cope with these winters that's getting to me. I got to be honest. If anybody wants to send me a shout out or ideas on how to cope with winter, let me know, because I'm always up for it. So listen, you know, I know here in the community at Talent Culture, we have a lot of remote workers. We have a lot of entrepreneurs, people who are starting businesses and business for themselves, or they're with, you know, brands who have a global mindset, right? So is there anything that you want to tell our listening audience before we kind of dive into this topic?
Well, I think the topic of global mindset is important for everyone. So whether you're in Massachusetts, Chicago, Florida, or any place on the globe, having a global mindset, which means that you are interested in finding out about diverse people and diverse cultures, you're okay with being uncomfortable in a different situation. Having that global mindset, I think, is important for everyone, everywhere.
Well, I mean, we live in a very connected world, right, especially when it comes to speaking about the workforce. So tell us, when you talk about global mindset and training, and you've been doing some amazing travel, I definitely want to hear more about that too, why this is so important. Can you tell us about a time when a trainer didn't have a global mindset, for example, and what that result was?
Yeah, there's lots of examples of different trainers that I know that have made mistakes, some of them as little as using the wrong title for someone in a classroom, and then even bigger mistakes. I can think back to a time when I was in China, and the group was different. I had taught in China a number of times. I had taught this topic a number of times. I thought that I had everything down pat. But when I met this particular group, they were just different. And they asked really challenging questions. And I had jet lag. And I have to be honest, I just didn't give it my all. And that's the other thing. If you have a global mindset, you have to have that resilience when you travel and train. And a lot of the times, if you've traveled someplace to train, you have got to be on. And I just wasn't. And the class started bad and went from bad to worse. And by the end of the day, the energy in the room was so low. And I think, if anything, because I was working for a company and I was representing the U.S. Home Office, and I think by the end of the day, the participants not only were not interested in the topic, but they weren't interested in the relationship that I was building as a representative of the U.S. Home Office for this company.
Wow. It's such an interesting tale about just being on your game, you know, and cluing into those cues. Like, when did you realize it wasn't going well? Like, at what point? Because as a trainer, you are constantly – you're on stage, basically.
Yes, you are. Well – I think I knew from the beginning. When we talk about having a global mindset, the other term that people use is cultural intelligence. And there are competencies associated with cultural intelligence. So it's having that drive and desire. It's having that knowledge of other cultures. It's about having a strategy and a game plan for when you work with people from other cultures, and then putting that plan into action. And so the problem with that particular training day, and the good news is it was a multiple-day course, so I could make adjustments, is that just on day one, because of jet lag, I think, I just didn't have that drive and desire. And the other mistake I made is that instead of being friendly with the participants when the morning didn't go well, what I did was I had lunch with one of the managers in the room that I knew, and they thought I was just ignoring them. So that just made the day go worse.
It was just a crabby bad day for you, huh?
It was. It was, well, and more important, it was a bad day for them.
Yeah.
And I spent the evening kind of doing this self-awareness and listing all the things that I did wrong and that I could have done better, and including doing some research around the questions that they had asked me that I, you know, they were unexpected questions. I didn't have the answers. And so day two started differently. I got a good night's sleep and really went in there with a new icebreaker and a commitment to really work with the group and to be and I think in training, we really are in service to our learners. I'm there to serve them so that they can learn as much as they can. So it was really about doing all of that. Yeah.
It's about taking care of you first, right? I mean, we have a learning community here in Talent Culture, and I feel the same way. I have to wake up every morning. You know, we have content to put out there, right? We have podcast topics to put together. And if I'm not getting my, you know, my rest or my yoga, or I'm feeling a little crabby, you know, who are we? I have to tune into other people. Like, who are we hurting by not taking care of ourselves? That's the real question here, right? So give us an example, because I know, you know, you had some sideways issues, right? Training went not how you thought it would go. You were traveling a lot. Give us an example of a time when a trainer made it work and helped the session or training. Like, what happened in that scenario?
Yeah. Well, I think of a couple of examples that my my friends, colleagues have talked to me about. It oftentimes happens that someone goes and they train in a different country, and oftentimes because English is the language of business, they are training in English. And so these are not people necessarily from the U.S., Canada, or the U.K., but I have friends from around the world that they speak English and they think their participants are going to speak English. And that when they get, even if they've done a good needs analysis, they meet the participants and their English isn't as good. And so these friends have talked about a time when what they had to do was to take that first morning break, change their slide deck. So maybe with their slide deck, they're going to take some words off the slide, put more visuals on. They're going to change their activities to something that involves more working at people's tables so participants can speak their own language and process the information. So they literally make adjustments to the content on the spot. And that's part of a good global mindset, because what it means is I have a plan going in there. So I have my high-level design, my plan, but I am aware enough of the situation to select different actions to make the training work instead.
Listen, you know, I think we all, in the collective, we understand why HR pros and organizations need to have a global mindset, but it's probably easier said than done. I can say that safely, right? So how can somebody develop a global mindset and do it in such a way that will have an impact on their own or their team's future performance? Because this is one of those, we can talk in buzzwords today, but how do you actually make this happen?
Well, I think the important thing to consider is that this is a growing kind of topic, a growing area, and there are a number of different, I'm going to say, books out there around developing your cultural intelligence. And David Livermore is an author that I've done a lot of studying of his work. And I love that he breaks it down into those four competencies I've already mentioned. And before I started researching his work, I didn't realize that desire was important. Everybody thinks they build a global mindset simply by reading about another culture. And when you realize it's not enough to have the knowledge, you still have to take the right actions associated with it. And so that if someone were here and not planning on all this international traveling, it would still be about reaching out to people who are from a different culture, trying to eat food of a different culture, watching movies from different cultures, to really expand your knowledge and appreciation for different cultures.
Let's back up just a little bit, because your story is so interesting. 25 countries and 25, what did you say? Did I hear that correctly?
25 countries, 25 different countries and 25 years of training.
That's incredible. What led you there? And tell us about those adventures. Are there, you know, countries that you really felt like clicked for you? We just want to hear more, because that's just fascinating.
So thanks for asking. I really appreciate that, Megan. So it started just early in my career with a seminar company that sent me to some different countries. And I really thought that was fun. Fun to travel from Chicago and go someplace else in the world. But when I look back at my career, and I'm an independent consultant and president of a company, the business was going well in 2000. And I had met someone who talked about being a volunteer and a global volunteer. And I was intrigued by that idea. And so in 2001, I contacted a company called Global Volunteers and said, I want to volunteer someplace in the world. And Global Volunteers has service programs in 18 countries. And so I ended up going to China for the first time in 2001. And actually did volunteer work. And I have to say, Megan, this has been a fun week for me because it's Chinese New Year's. And my first trip to China in 2001, I met George and Catherine, and we have still remained friends over the past 17 years. And we just talked to each other this week for Chinese New Year. So, but that's how it started. That's how it started.
And how are you collaborating and connecting? Are you on Skype? Like, What tools are you using for collaboration?
Well, when you're collaborating with someone in China, WeChat is what you want to be using there. And so we used WeChat, but I have a group of global trainers that I have been friends with for the past 5 years. We've done some collaborative work together, and we use WhatsApp.
Okay,
and
got
for
it.
5 years, there's 15 of us that talk on WhatsApp every couple of days, and we stay in touch from around the globe.
You mean WhatsApp, I think, or is WhatsApp something new?
No,
WhatsApp.
From Chicago.
Hey, listen. WhatsApp. We can even make up a new one. I mean, there's so many, right? It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, you guys from Chicago, you know what I'm saying.
Donna, Steffi, we know what you're saying, okay?
That's right.
So
that's right.
Let's talk about people, right? Because for me, it's all about people. It's all about culture.
Right.
It's all about people. It's all about how companies hire you, right? I'm getting my New York accent there for you, okay? We're having some fun on that. But, you know, tell me about these issues that can arise, because I know if you're in a classroom or you're in any kind of setting with people from varying cultures, sometimes there's stuff that just happens, right? How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
How can these, if there's issues that pop up, how do you resolve them? Like, this is, and again, this is all about, like, you being in the hot seat or the teacher or on stage, right? You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know what? I wish there was an easy answer to that. I think that if I can give a kind of a general answer, it is about having this mindset to treat everybody with respect and to allow your learners to preserve their dignity no matter what. I believe that participants are difficult, even the most difficult participants oftentimes don't even realize they're difficult or they're not even doing it intentionally. So they've got their own issues going on, and then it surfaces in the classroom. And so really allowing that dignity and respect is so important. But what's interesting is that different cultures want you to handle things differently. So if you're in the Middle East and something happens in the classroom and you as the instructor embarrasses a participant in the Middle East, you should acknowledge it immediately and apologize. But in Japan, you shouldn't acknowledge it and apologize. You should wait until you can have a private conversation.
Interesting. Yeah,
in
you're
South,
right.
In
lots
South America.
Of, lots of differences and nuance, right?
And nuances, yes. Yes, so it's about knowing those nuances. In South America.
Yeah, we want to hear more.
Yeah, in South America, for example, what happens is if something goes wrong, like let's say you have participants that come back late from lunch, what you want to do is you want to acknowledge those people who came back on time from lunch and not say anything about the people who came back late. So it really...
All right. Seriously, like how do we keep track of all this? Like when you're training, say an HR pro, like how do you actually set this up? Talk to us about that, because this is really interesting and not easy, right?
It's not easy.
Very learned.
Yes. It's a part of it, you know, especially if you talk about time issues, it's so different because you can be here in the U.S. and have participants, whether you're on a webinar or an instructor-led webinar, or whether you're face-to-face, you can have participants from around the globe in that classroom. And attitude toward time is huge in every culture. And so a lot of the time you have to set up how are we going to handle time and what does it mean to be on time and what is the expectation about being early and breaks and lunch and what time people come back and how much time we spend for that. You have to almost set all of that up in an introductory letter or in the pre-work so that you establish those kind of ground rules as you move forward in the class. So that's the way to do that, is you have to do that in advance.
And you have to be political.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a whole other personality thing going on here, too. Like, you can't be talking at people. You have to be talking with people and getting people to have that kind of consensus, right?
Yes. Yes. Megan, there are, you know, over 300 multinational organizations. And so a lot of your listeners then probably work for one of those multinational organizations. And whether they are having participants from around the globe come face-to-face at headquarters here in the U.S. or whether they are doing a webinar, what has to happen is that the trainer wants to or should want to have a needs analysis conversation with that employee's manager before they come to training or join the webinar. That's a really good way. Yeah, for a local trainer to be able to talk to a manager who also works for the organization and say, help me understand about your culture. You're sending three participants from India. What do I need to know about Indian culture in order to be able to serve their needs in the classroom? And what's really interesting is they'll probably say, oh, nothing. Everything is the same. And that's just simply not true. And so I think as trainers, we have to really push in that audience needs analysis conversation to say, no, I really want to understand the folks that are coming to training. And tell me what they like, what they don't like. What do I need to know about their culture? I say it this way. They always say, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. That doesn't apply for learning. We can't change our learning style. We can't change what our culture was, how we were brought up, and how we learned to learn just because we're traveling to the U.S. or we're getting on a webinar based in the U.S. The learners have their own style, and we have to respond to their style.
Love it. Talk to us about this approach to training or educating adults in a workplace, and how does this differ from educating people in a school environment? And talk to us about some of those obstacles that exist with adult learning, because they're there. That's real.
Absolutely. So for adult learners, they like a more informal learning environment. We have to know that they learn based on previous knowledge. So again, before you get to that classroom, the needs analysis conversation is really important. So what do the learners already know on this topic? What are their attitudes? How are we going to help grow and build their knowledge? So we have to know what learners know, so we can build our content on their knowledge. And then the other thing is adult learners are so busy. We have to be able to share those nuggets of information that they can use immediately back on the job.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't have time. Yeah, because
nobody does.
No. The new trend is micro-learning. And I say it this way, think YouTube or Google. And it's about training companies being able to design that 3 to 10 minute training snippet so that that the learners have it at their fingertips and can use that technology, maybe even in their workstation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely want to unfold top trends with you because that's something I hear a lot about. And I've also spoken and written about this topic as well. Are there trends in the size of company or vertical of the company that are using this more than others? Talk to us a little bit about the types of brands that you're seeing out there and who's actually putting something impressive into place. Because we all love case studies. We all like to go, okay, we've researched it. Now what?
Yeah. So I think one of the documents that I'd like to look at is the ATD State of the Industry report. And that just came out for 2016, so it's a 2017 report. And what they're showing is, and this is a little surprising, is that these large multinational organizations, their trend in face-to-face learning is really down. So for these larger organizations, only about 43% of their training is done in the traditional classroom face-to-face. And when you're thinking global, that makes sense because we're talking about can we really continue to fly people all around the world? So they're using more technology. And then the medium and the smaller companies, they're still doing a little bit more face-to-face. So their numbers are up over 50%, 53 to 57%. Where your employees are co-located, you can still do that face-to-face training. But the average now is that only 51% of training is done face-to-face.
Really? Yeah. And that's still pretty high.
Yeah.
That's going to continue to drop, right?
It is going to continue to drop. It is going to continue to drop.
Where do you think that's going to continue to drop? Is there countries that you're seeing that, you know, a difference? Is it going to drop somewhere first, for example?
Well, I think it is. We see it dropping in the U.S. the most. And so still in other countries, and it may be because they have more co-located employees, that there are higher percentages in face-to-face training. So the drop is really we're seeing in the U.S.
Right.
There was a global study. ATD did a global study. Now it's about a year old, but they did a global study, and that's where we were able to see that in other countries, there's still more face-to-face training going on than in the U.S.
Very cool. And what other trends are you seeing? Anything we're missing?
Well, the other one is the trend toward mobile learning. And what we see is that clearly 60% of people say that they use some kind of mobile learning in order to learn. Again, what may happen is that may just be someone doing something at their desk and saying, all right, I have to write this report. But, you know, let me see how I should form a sentence. And so let me go on Google and see, you know, what comes first, a noun or a verb. I mean, whatever. They're doing their own, you know, kind of searching on their phone. Companies still have to do a better job of developing that mobile learning. So people are doing it kind of spontaneously, but only around 20% of companies say that they have some real intention around developing the global learning. And so we see that as a trend. And surprisingly, Megan, in China, they have more global learners in China. But no surprise because they have more telephones. They have more mobile phones. So that's part of it.
Well, and they kind of have a lot of people, right?
Yeah, yes, they do.
You talk about population. It comes into play, right?
Absolutely.
Very, very interesting. So remote work. It's something that, you know, I'm passionate about. I've been a remote worker for over a decade now. It's becoming a stronger reality with every passing year. We know how important it is to keep a strong line of communication with remote workers, keeping everybody up to date with latest info, skills training. What are one or two keys to successful virtual training, and how can trainers be effective in making a connection to these people?
Yeah.
And we're down by the way, to about 60 seconds left. Time flies. So just FYI.
Okay. So for instructor-led virtual training, the key is to engage that learner every 3 to 5 minutes. And so often what happens is that the trainer thinks that they can lecture, and they just can't. They have to use the tools available in order to engage that learner in the virtual remote world. And don't be afraid to turn on the cameras. That's the other thing. That's 30
the
seconds.
Camera.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Anything else, Donna, you want to share with us? This has been a really interesting conversation, and I know I've learned a lot. I know hopefully the community is learning a lot right now from you on this topic. Anything else you'd like to share with us before we close and take this on over to Twitter?
I think the most important thing is really to make that commitment to really have the drive and the desire to work cross-culturally, because I think that's where our future is.
Love it. Well stated, Donna. Steffi, enjoy that time in Florida.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for being here.
Okay. Bye, Megan.